The RTE Rugby Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. Coming up over the next half hour or so, we're going to be looking back on victories for Leinster and Munster in the quarterfinals of the European Rugby Champions Cup and indeed ahead to their semi-final chances. We're also very close to the concluding phase of league games in the Guinness Pro 12. We'll chat about what lies in store for the Irish provinces who boast realistic knockout ambitions. Much more to come too. I'm joined by the RTE TV rugby editor Wes Liddy and from the studios of RTE in Cork by the former Irish international David Corkery. We'll chat to David in a second, Wes. You're good?
All good, yeah. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Now, rather exciting time, I think, for everybody in terms of Irish rugby, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. After all the doom and gloom of last year, to have two teams in the semi-finals this year, one Saturday, one Sunday, makes for a good weekend.
David, I suppose that's how people are really judged, isn't it? How you perform at the top table, and given the kind of starting off point and perhaps even rolling back the clock to 12 months ago and where we are now with two teams in the semi-final of the European Champions Cup, I mean, that's been, I don't want to say success, but that's certainly a big improvement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, you would have got probably a nice little odds on the Leinster and Munster making the semi-final, and you know, wouldn't it be absolutely fantastic if two of them could be appearing in the final up in Edinburgh? It would be some occasion if that could happen. But there's 80 minutes of rugby to go for both of them. That's going to be a fairly ferocious battle.
And I suppose, I mean, the longer you go in any competition, you're realistically playing against the better teams. And I mean, two very hard opponents, David.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you only have to look at that Saracens team. I mean, this is their fifth consecutive semi-final in the European Championship. I mean, that's an incredible rate to go. And I think everybody knows you kind of have to lose one of these games before you actually learn how to win one. And like last year, Saracens lost in the final. And they're going to be ready. And look, Mark McCall is a very shrewd operator. Regrettably, he was let go by Ulster, I think, rather unfairly. But since he's joined Saracens, he's grown in stature, and the team that he has around him. You only have to look through the squad, the likes of Ashton Farrell, and the monster that is Billy Vunipola, playing at number eight. I mean, these guys are class players. But that's not saying we don't have class players ourselves, and it's going to take a mighty good team to beat him as well.
Claremont have been there or thereabouts, haven't they, without sort of exactly bursting the door down. We're all waiting for that magnificent Claremont performance.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you know, they're there. They're there by right, really. You don't get to a semi-final of a Champions Cup by luck or by faith. They've got a very, very good side. They've earned their way to get there. Look, you know, I think there is issues with French rugby and the money that's floating around there, and a lot of saying they're a bought team, but that's the way the professional game has gone, and I think we just have to adhere to it and we have to get on with it a bit. You know, it may not suit. Certainly it doesn't do French rugby any good at that national level. But when you look at Toulon's record over the last 3 years, I think they won it 3 years in a row. You know, they say you can't buy success. I think that proves it wrong.
Wes, you were in Thomond Park last week. I mean, it's the latest in a series of full houses for Munster. This season, I saw somebody write during the course of the week that it was like the good old days are the glory days in terms of, you know, the whole atmosphere and everything like that. It was some occasion, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think the build-up right around the town that day, everyone was very much tuned into it. Great atmosphere. I suppose, you know, it's hard to quibble when you score 41 points and beat four times champions in a quarter-final, but I don't think it was necessarily Munster's best performance of the year. They were a little flat at times, I thought, and I suppose the injuries going forward are a big worry, and I'd have a slight worry with Munster that just the way they play and the kind of, you know, their main players have a lot of highs and lows this year with obviously terrible low and real emotional toll taken with Axel, and then, you know, they were in the All Blacks in November and into the Six Nations, and their squad isn't the deepest, and I just wonder kind of, is there a danger that possibly physically or maybe more so mentally that they run out of steam, because I think they are a team that needs to be, you know, absolutely at fever pitch to get the big results and the big performances.
It was interesting to hear Razzie Rasmus in the aftermath of the match saying, yeah, delighted to win, but it wasn't our best performance. So he was kind of keeping everybody on the ground, which kind of, you know, which kind of gives an indication of what he's thinking of.
Yeah, and I think, look, it probably wasn't, maybe it didn't make any difference, but it was certainly, there was a few distractions off the pitch in the week leading into the match with both Donnacha Roine and the speculation about Razzie. being honest, I think if you were playing it in England or playing on a neutral ground, I think most people would fancy Saracens for the semi. But, you know, with the year that's in it, and it's a bit of a cliche, but, I mean, I think Munster will relish being underdogs and having, you know, more or less a home crowd behind them. Maybe that'll get them over the line in the semi. But I think of all the teams around Europe, I mean, if it was Claremont coming to Dublin, I'd fancy Munster, but I don't think Saracens are the type of team to fold. I think they're made of fairly stern stuff. And as Dave said a minute ago, really, in fairness, Mark McCall's done an incredible job there, and, you know, he's certainly a last Irish rugby going forward, do you think, you know?
David, a lot of chat in Munster and Munster circles in the last couple of weeks about, you know, Donegal Ryan maybe on his way out. I mean, the dogs in the street are telling us that he's off to Racing Metro on a 2-year contract. You know, strong indication certainly on the Twitterati machine that maybe Razzie Rasmus may not be around next year either. I mean, certainly the players didn't leave that disrupt their preparation even in terms of their mental ability last week.
No, absolutely. And I mean, look, like Wes alluded to it again, I mean, you only have to go back to the whole Anthony Foley situation. And I think what the players have done, and in fairness to Razzie Rasmus and I suppose Munster as a whole, the way they've handled that whole situation, I don't think, like, there is no book written to deal with something like that. And I think they, you know, the great kudos must go to them for the way they've produced themselves and the way they've acted and the decisions they made. Like, a lot of people would have disagreed, and I would have been one, that they played the against Glasgow in the Champions Cup after the day after Anthony was laid to rest. But they've done well, as I say. Looking, you know, as I say, there is no rule book to go to. There is no guide to deal with a situation like that. And I think the mental issues, I think if they can handle what they've gone through in the last couple of months, I think issues like the Donegal Ryan situation, you know, whilst very, very disappointing, I think more disappointing for Donegal than anybody else, and the whole Razzie situation. Look, that isn't speculation. I mean, Razzie has already come out and he said, look, that he's had chats, formal chats with them. So if he wasn't interested, you know, then he wouldn't have had the chats. So there must be some interest there. And look, in saying that, you know, if he does go, I think we all have to respect his wishes. I mean, he's a South African man. He played with South Africa, and for him, it's probably a dream to coach his national side. And for, if you look at it really and boil it right down, it's just him going home. And I guess it happened to a lot of us when we went across to England, when the game went first professional, we all came home to play with the provinces. And I think it's something we just have to respect. But look, the players certainly didn't leave those issues get in the way last week. You've got a Toulouse side, which are, I think, the most expensive side in Europe that have been put together. I think they have a budget of 31.5 million a year to build a team. And the way they performed, and I used the word flopped in Thomond Park last week, really is a credit to Munster. They're made of stern stuff this year, and whether they can go all the way in one respect is, look, yes, we'd love them to go and get to the final and win the final, but to me, for what they've done so far in the current circumstances, is a credit to them.
I know that during the course of the week, even in the aftermath of the match last weekend, and we'll talk about Leinster in a second, but people were kind of complaining about the fact that, you know, Toulouse were rubbish and everything. But I was trying to make the point in a kind of a losing side of an argument that, I mean, good teams will score two tries or will score a try or will absolutely demolish you in the last 5 or 6 minutes, which gives a kind of disjointed look to the scoreboard. But that's what a good team does, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what they do. Look, I mean, like when I saw the draw come out when Munster got to lose, you know, you could not have asked for a better draw. They've been here before. They've left with their tails firmly lodged between their legs. And to me, Toulouse had beaten themselves even before they came into Thomond Park. I mean, the way the game started for Munster, I mean, was it 2 minutes into the game, a stupid elbow into the face of Duncan Williams, and they're down a man. And in that period, Munster get 9 points. You know, so they weren't mentally prepared for it. And at times, the French teams come to this country and come to other countries, they almost concede defeat before they set foot on the plane to come across. It's just their mentality. And I've listened to Ronan O'Gara speak about it, who's with Racing Metro at the moment, and he can't really understand the mentality of them. It's like, especially in the top 14, when they play away from home, it's almost a given that they're actually going to lose those games, and it's almost acceptable over there. So, but again, look, they've been 4-time champions. They have an immense team, albeit an ageing team. They've got huge finances behind them, and look, as I say, credit to Munster. They did what they had to do on the day, and the next 80 minutes now is the most important. And that happens on Saturday. They get over that against Glasgow, and then we go on to the big one.
Wes, before we leave the game last week, how concerned were you when you found out that Conor Murray wasn't playing?
very, I suppose. I thought they'd have. I think Toulouse was a good draw from. So I still thought they'd get it done. And to be fair, for a guy that's taken huge flack from supporters in the past, in Duncan Williams, he stepped up again and has done several times this season. I think Rassie's done a brilliant job, particularly, you know, and how he's managed him, and in terms of the confidence he seems to have given him, and he's always very quick to point out his importance to the team. But, you know, the big games, heading into play Saracens, play the Holders, yeah, would you be more comfortable with Conor there? Of course you would, any team in the world almost would. So, you know, I suppose with 15 minutes to go, when there was still only 8 points in it last week, and you're missing, in for one reason or another, Conor, CJ, Peter Manny and Keith Earls, who are, you know, arguably our four best players, you certainly wouldn't like to be going into a semi-final missing the four of those.
David, let's reflect on the Leinster game against Wasps. I saw somebody, you know, when the Wasps or the teams were announced on the Friday, somebody on Twitter, a UK journalist, said, "Wow, look at that Wasp backline! It's the best in Europe. You know, they're going to run rampage tomorrow." Now, that was last week, obviously.
I saw it. I think he referred to it, kind of going through the squads and saying that, you know, on paper, that the Wasps team and the Toulouse team should have beaten the Irish provinces. But again, that's not always the way it works. You know, Leinster are at home in front of a full crowd. They've done extremely well under Leo Cullen. I suppose they have a bit of a point to prove, like similar to Munster. Over the last couple of years, they haven't been where they should be in terms of getting to the knockout stages and getting to the finals. But they played extremely well, and you know, I've seen a lot of people trying to knock Sexton, you know, out there and saying he's bottling a few things and he's probably play acting a bit, but he's not. I mean, he's a superb player. What he's done this year in the Six Nations, he's taken a lot of slack. And again, look, in fairness to Leo Cullen, he's done a great job there. And, like, Sexton is just a product of Leinster. And again, just some of the tries they scored and some of their defensive capabilities, and then the young players like Jack Cronin coming through, like, these guys are the future of Irish rugby, and you know, they're breeding them up there. Their academy is going extremely well, and look, they are they certainly deserve their spot. But look, they're away from home now next, and that's going to be a very big ask heading to France. Anytime any team goes to France, it's a big ask, and you know, they're going to be in a cauldron, and atmosphere down there is going to be immense, and they're going to need as much support as they can.
Your impressions of Joey Carberry?
Impression of Joey Carberry, very good. You know, probably a small bit slight, needs an extra few kgs here and there, but certainly has the ability to step outside the box, and that's something that I always look for in a young player coming through, someone who's not afraid to make mistakes. And that's how guys will learn. You know, I encourage any player, or even any young guy that you see, to step outside the box and not be afraid, because if they stay within that box of conformity, they're never going to get anywhere. They're always just going to be a player. You look at the Sextons, you look at the O'Garas of this world, they're all prepared to step outside the box and break the rules. And again, you know, this is a saying I suppose I live and died by when I play the game, is that rugby is, you know, cheating. It's only cheating if you're caught. You have to break the rules, and you need to bend those rules as much as you can to be successful. And certainly O'Gara and Sexton, you know, they're not afraid to take risks and fail, and that's the important thing for me. He's not afraid to have a go himself, to challenge the defence and keep guys honest.
Yeah, he was just going back to Carberry again. Stuart Lancaster was in with us a couple of weeks back, and he was saying that you know, he really fancied him at 15 going forward, that he actually compared him to Israel Dagan, the options he gave you as a first receiver on the blind side and things like that. And I suppose, you know, there was a little bit of a clamour at times, maybe, you know, to see Jarrod Payne play at 15 for Ireland. You know, Jarrod Payne's in his 30s as well, with a summer tour coming up. You know, Carberry, you know, he could be a 10 in time, but for the minute, maybe he's a starter for Ireland at 15 a lot sooner than we think.
David, That's an interesting one. David, when I don't want to be making a big meal out of this one, but the Vili Leroux incident, just sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek, is there anything that you've done in a match, I mean in terms of dropping a ball now, that you've regretted and you wished you hadn't done it?
I suppose the one mistake, and it's been alluded to on many occasions, certainly by the older members of the Munster squad, the Golovs and the Clohessies. I remember playing to get into a quarter final in Cast in France, and we were drawing the game, and that's all we had to do, was we would have been in our first European Cup final. Of course, idiot here gets the ball, decides to run it out of his own 22, knocks it on in a tackle. They pick it up and they score in the corner. Game over. That was actually, it was actually quite painful, I'll be honest with you. I took it to heart. And look, I suppose you look back now at Europe and the success and the calibre that it's looked at in world rugby, and to have made a quarter final, Munster's first quarter final at the time, would have been nice. But I suppose that's the closest I've been to that type of an incident, you know.
Jeremy Staunton had a pretty good one. His debut for Gary Owen, the league was still going strong. It was himself and Tom Tierney were the halfbacks for Gary Owen, and Rog and Stringer were playing for Conn. Yeah. And it was a big, you know, it was hyped up, big matchup, two up and coming sets of halfbacks. And Jeremy made a break in the last couple of minutes, went over the try line, hand up to the crowd and triumph, dropped the ball out of the other hand. That was his debut for Gary Owen.
God, look, it's easy to be wise now, I suppose, with all the camera angles, it doesn't help either. But just even in terms of the crowds, lads, at both places, a full house in Thomond Park, a full house at the Aviva Stadium, I mean, David, people are voting with their feet, aren't they, in their pockets?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, there was a huge scramble for Munster tickets again this year. And I suppose, you know, it just really goes to show that crowd will follow a team that's doing well. And you know, I suppose a lot of people would have been disappointed with the Munster support over the last couple of years when they weren't doing well. But it just goes to show, look, it's a facet of all life. No matter what you do, whether it's business or sport, that if you're doing well, you will get the support. And obviously, again, you know, I hate referring to it, but it's because it's still fairly raw and I suppose somewhat unbelievable. But the whole Anthony Foley situation, you know, that gave Munster the kick in the arse that they probably needed. And you would like to think that it's not because of Anthony's passing as to where they are now in terms of progress. But again, the whole crowd situation, and look, you know, rugby is religion in Limerick. And it really is, you know, whether we like it or don't like it here in Cork, it's Munster, or Limerick is the home of Munster rugby, and Thomond Park is the heart of it. So again, it's been a great tribute to him. Some of the stuff that's gone on over the last couple of months has been incredible. And, you know, as I say, to me, no matter what happens between now and the end of the season, I think they've done extremely well. They should be very, very proud. And again, you know, I make reference to Munster in that respect as well. They can hold their heads up high no matter what happens now.
I know that in a couple of weeks' time, we'll look at the semi-finals, David, in kind of more detail, but you and I may not have this conversation. I might not be involved the next time this happens. But reaching the semi-final, should we be ambitious, or are we going to be heartbroken?
It's a tough one. Like if it was a French team, I think we should definitely be ambitious and be very, very confident. I know Wes alluded to it earlier on in terms of Saracen's strength and their depth. And again, you know, they've been there before. They've had the pain. They've been to the final. They've been to, as I said, this is their fifth consecutive semi-final. You know, they've been there. They lost. And it's, you know, to lose something like that, you learn from those mistakes, and you don't let it happen again. And I know Munster have been there and they've lost as well. But I just think that the Saracen squad is mature now. Mark McCall is a seasoned coach. They'll travel with fairly decent support as well. It'll be a sea of red because Saracens normally play in red as well, so that might help Munster. But I just wonder, when it comes to the last 20 minutes and the bench that Saracens have to offer and the bench that we have to offer, we certainly won't be wanting for effort, but I just think the quality might catch us in the last 20 minutes.
What about Leinster? I mean, of the two Irish teams, would Leinster have the better chance to qualify for the final?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, Munster will look at going to the Aviva as a home semi-final, whereas Leinster have to travel away to the bowels of French rugby in Toulon, and Clermont.
Yeah,
you know, it can be a fairly ferocious atmosphere down there, and the drums will be playing. And but look, again, you know, they're a young side, as I said. You know, some of their young players have shown immense courage and ability, and they're not afraid. And that's the new breed of professional player that's coming through. These guys, they're cocky, they're arrogant, and that's good in a certain respect. They don't, you know, have a huge amount of fear travelling to these places. But in saying that, if Leinster were playing Claremont in the Aviva, I would certainly back them. But the heading away, it's going to be on the day, and it's going to be a 50-50 call. And if I had to put my house in it, I, you know, you would have to clip Tip Claremont.
Yeah, hard one. I suppose it's hard to say Leinster are the more fancied when they are heading away to France, but that seems to be the vibe in some quarters of the media. Both 50-50 games, really. I mean, we'd love to see the All-Ireland final. In truth, we'd probably be doing well to get one of them through. I think Dave was right when he said earlier, I mean, you're not trying to be defeatist about it, but I think for Munster, for where they were coming from last year and all that's gone on, I think getting to a semi-final has been a huge achievement as it is. Perhaps Leinster's ambitions are slightly higher. And in fairness, I think a lot of the credit for Leinster publicly has been attributed to Stuart Lancaster, and I think it's probably only right that we kind of point out that, you know, Leo Collins had a big hand in it for a young coach as well, and you know, well done to him, fair play to him.
Now, away from Europe, obviously, I mean, there's the kind of two more rounds of the Guinness Pro 12 for the next couple of weekends before we hit the heights of Europe again. I mean, there are some absolutely massive games this weekend, almost sort of standing on their own shoulders. David, is Connacht's game this weekend a huge match from their point of view, given the fact that they were beaten away last weekend to Zebre?
Yep, I mean, I think like the hard part for Connacht was always going to be follow up what they did last year. You know, anybody can get a hole in one, but do it again in the following hole, and you're something special. And look, Connacht had a magnificent year last year, going on to win it. Like, they had huge momentum. They picked up a few injuries early on this year. Well, I'd say more than a few injuries earlier on this year, and they just didn't have the depth in squad. And then when things start to go against you, everything starts to go against you. And then the news of Pat Lamb came that he was departing for Bristol at the end of the year. You know, all these things can have a very, very bad mental effect on the players. And, you know, it's like Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And they just, you know, to lose away last week to Zebre, you know, that probably was the lowest point in their last 36 months of rugby. Like, you shouldn't be losing away to a team who are really, really struggling, to a country that really can't get a foothold, can't build a platform or put any foundations in place to build a very, very strong rugby ethics ethos over there. So that was low, and I said Pat Lamb will be sore from it, and the players will be sore, and I see they've made a huge amount of changes now for this week's game. So hopefully we'll get a bit of a backlash, but it looks like, you know, their European escapade, and certainly the top level, is cooked now.
Yeah, it's true what you say though, Michael, about the size of the games coming. You know, every week now, I mean, you're looking Leinster travelling to Ospreys, Munster to Glasgow coming to Munster. Next week, Ulster down in Thomond Park. Yeah. I mean, it's just non-stop now at this stage. And in fairness, as much given out as we did about the restructuring of the tournament and with regards to the Champions Cup, and, you know, how it was driven by maybe ulterior motives with the French and the English, It does seem to have improved the Pro 12. There is something to play for right down the line in it. You know, it's really, really competitive to make that top six now.
You look at the two teams that are coming to Munster. I mean, Glasgow are now out of the Champions Cup. They're done and dusted.
Unless they're the first Scottish team, though.
No, but I'm talking about
in terms of this year's tournament.
So they've only one competition to concentrate on. Ulster didn't even make it to the quarterfinals, so they've only one competition to concentrate on. So, I mean, they're going to throw all their eggs into one basket against Munster, and, you know, picking up one or two injuries, as you alluded to earlier.
Do you think, Dave, if you're in Munster's position with the depth of squad they have, or lack of depth, Are you openly prioritising that semi-final now at the risk of maybe missing a home semi in the Pro 12?
No. I think they should go full out for all of them. I'll be honest with you. I mean, there's momentum there. You shouldn't really want to stop that. I mean, winning is a habit, like losing is a habit, and the Munster are in the winning habit at the moment, and I think they should go balls out for all those games. They should go to win, look to win both titles. And that's what's in the mind of the Munster players. I mean, you know, there's an extra added energy to these guys this year for various reasons. You know, their squad is good; it's not great. And look, injuries can happen at any stage. They can happen in a training session. So, faith has a lot to do with it. So, but again, I think they should go for it. You know, be as strong as they can in both competitions. And even you look at the A side now are in the B&I Cup final as well. So they have momentum there. And if they concentrate on something, they could end up with nothing. So, balls out, all games.
Arguably, David, the team in this country with the strongest squad is Leinster, and they're playing Ospreys at the Liberty Stadium. A match I'll be at this coming weekend. They're top of the table, you know. Ospreys up that neck of the woods as well. Given the condensed nature of the top of the table at the moment, with what, only four series of matches remaining, I mean that's a massive game. But as we've been talking about in the last while, this Leinster squad has certainly got a lot of strength and depth, hasn't it?
Yeah, it does. And again, I suppose a lot of it goes back to Girvan Dempsey, who was in charge of their academy structure over the last couple of years, and he's done a great job. And look, again, I suppose the whole foundation of Leinster rugby is very, very big, with the schools playing a huge part in it up there, and indeed the clubs. And you know, whilst we see, I suppose, the national team doing okay, other provinces doing really well, I think it's worth mentioning that the club game in this country is on its knees. And that's probably the best way to describe it. And I've seen it at the cold face of it. So that's something I think that needs to be addressed. And I know the professional game is a ferocious beast in terms of the money that it consumes. And you've got the pressures of France, the French clubs and the English clubs throwing huge money at top quality players. And it's hard to keep hold of them. And I know they are if you were trying their best. But I really, really think that if they don't look after the stuff, the cold face of the game, you know, they will have trouble down the lines. And I think that's Leinster's success at the moment is proof of that they've looked after their academy. Their academy players are paying dividends now for them, and they've got a fairly decent squad. So that's just something I'd like to make point. And if you don't believe me, just ask any club coach out there in any divisions of the leagues. I think there's five live leagues in divisions in the AIL league. So ask any of them, and they'll tell you they struggle to even get a team together on a Saturday afternoon. So it's something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt their academy has been phenomenal, the players they've brought through. I think sometimes you see it thrown out that it's as if they're doing more or better work than some of the other provincial academies, which, you know, isn't necessarily the case. Their base is far bigger. They are getting guys ready for professional rugby from that really competitive schools environment, as Dave was saying. And just on the club front, I think, you know, it is always struggling along, but it's, Division 1A now this week, it's really building to a good climax. You've a massive game between Young Munster and Cork Conn, which is effectively a shootout for a home semi-final, which for the clubs, obviously, the one day maybe you get a good gate, you do your pre-match lunch, you can build a bit of income out of it. And, you know, in fairness, I think the AIL, maybe not through the help of any of the governing bodies, but I think, you know, the standard has been pretty good the last few years as well.
And just on that as well, like, I mean, it has been good. There's no two ways about it, and it has produced some good players. And in fairness to the provinces this year, they've released a lot of the players back to the clubs to play when they weren't playing. That's been a huge plus. And I think, again, a bit of kudos to the provinces for that. And certainly in Munster, I know Erasmus wants his players to be playing week in, week out, not locked away in a gym or wrapped in cotton wool. And that's how they learn their trade. I mean, they're much better off going down playing against Young Munsters and an old seasoned tight head prop coming up against a young Cork Conn prop, showing him a few tricks of the trade. And that's the way you learn your trade, not stuck in a gym. You don't play rugby in a gym, you play it on the field.
I think they're going to have open trials as well this summer, Munster, for club players. I've heard of someone, you know, maybe they get someone out of it, maybe they don't, but it's certainly a welcome initiative, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's an incentive for a young player to keep going. I mean, we have a lot of young players out there. Their dream is to play professional rugby, and this could be their opportunity that they need. So again, that's a huge plus in my opinion.
David, you've spoken and you've mentioned the phrase a couple of times there about people learning their trade. How welcome or how important a development is it that you see, you know, the news during the course of the week, you know, that Felix Jones, Ron Nagara, Girvan Dempsey, people like that will be going with Ireland on the tour this coming summer, obviously the two test matches in Japan and the game against the USA in New Jersey, that they are brought along, well, I said brought along for the spin, because obviously will be doing a hell of a lot of work. I mean, it certainly is a good opportunity for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's positive, and it's great forward thinking by their RFU as well. They're looking to the future. They're looking at, you know, possible Irish coaches down the line, and I know certainly O'Gara would love a crack at that whip, you know, and I think he did extremely well. I think he made the right choice by heading away to France. You know, I think Munster rugby was Ronan O'Gara. That's what brought him right up through the ages, and it was embedded in his blood. But you need to get away. You need to see how the other side of the world works as well, and the difficulties that they're having. And you learn more from that than you will by staying at home. But again, I think it's great foresight by the RFU to, and probably Joe Smith more than anybody else, to take these guys away. They learn a huge. The young players will learn a huge amount, and I hope they bring a very young, inexperienced squad away to these games. And again, if they lose, so be it. So what? You know, we need to be building towards a World Cup now and getting to at least a semi-final. That's our goal. We need to get to a semi-final to show that we're all the progression we've made over the last decade, the last 15 years of Irish rugby is going to pay off for us. So certainly World Cup, we need to be looking at it. And the likes of O'Gara and Felix Jones, these guys coming in, they're huge experience, and they'll bring through a lot of the amateur stuff when they played as well. And I suppose a lot of the younger players would have missed that. But I think it's very, very important that that isn't lost to the game of professional rugby.
So I'd be giving a thumbs up to Joe Schmidt for sharing his knowledge and being, or sort of not being afraid to bring other people in.
That's it. You can't be afraid, Michael. Like, if you're afraid in professional rugby, then you're never going to get anywhere. It's about taking risks. It's about being as professional as you can, but you need to step outside that box of conformity, as I keep on saying, and, you know, take the risks. You're never going to get anywhere as long as you stay inside it.
All right. Okay. Listen, David, thanks indeed. Wes, do you have anything to add in there? You want to?
No, not really. I think Dave said it all. Big thumbs up for Raj and Felix and Garvin, for sure.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, I think we're going to leave it there. That's the reality. David, thanks indeed for joining us. Good to talk to you.
Pleasure.
As always, I don't do it that often. Maybe as often as I need to. So
you're not in the real capital enough, Mick. That's the problem.
Good man. Thanks, David Corky. Thanks indeed to Wes Liddy. Wes Liddy, we'll be back next week. Remember, the RTE GA podcast is also available on iTunes and SoundCloud every Sunday evening. Damien O'Mara produced this week's show. Until next time, cheerio, and we'll talk to you again. Bye.
The RTE Rugby Podcast.